My guest is Midge Raymond. She's a co-founder of Ashland Creek Press with her husband, John Yunker. She's the author of the novels Floriana and My Last Continent, along with the award-winning short story collection Forgetting English. Midge has taught writing at Boston University, San Diego Writers, Inc., and various conferences around the world. Midge and John co-authored their latest book, Animal Rights, Prompts and Practices to Guide the Animal Writer's Journey. Welcome, Midge.
Thanks so much, Mike.
So, spoiler alert, this book seems to be much more about the mechanics of writing than about animals, isn't it?
Definitely. It's a book for writers who love animals, and particularly writers, it's for all writers, but particularly for writers who wish to write about animals. We both felt that the time has come for a book that aims to encourage writers to portray animals empathetically and authentically, because the power of stories is so great. And in the past, we've seen that sometimes the effects of literature can be devastating to animals, such as with Peter Benchley's novel Sharks, and Jaws, and the film that came from that led to this almost universal fear of sharks. So that's just one example. And Peter Benchley later became involved in shark conservation and expressed regret for the way he portrayed sharks as villains in the story, when that's not the reality at all. You know, the great whites don't go around attacking people and eating humans. But, you know, people began to fear that, and that's the power of story. And so we just felt like it would be a great way to get something out into the world to encourage writers to really think about how they portray animals in their work.
Well, in your first chapter, I found a few passages that sort of encapsulates a lot of what this book is about. And I know I didn't prep you on this, but would it be okay if you read from it?
Sure.
Okay, I just want you to read page 6 through the half of page 7.
Okay, with this at the subhead here.
You start with page 6, yeah. At the top of page 6.
As both vegans and writers, we want to create a better world for animals. Being vegan is the easy part, but as writers, we know we can do more. If we want to see a better future for all living creatures, we need to start by imagining it. And what better place to do this than in stories? What's often missing in literature is the idea of animals as individuals, as characters in their own right. All too often, animals are deployed as props. For example, a swimmer in the ocean may encounter a shark simply as a means of heightening tension, despite the fact that a swimmer is far more likely to die by drowning than by shark attack. These long-accepted tropes are overdue to be questioned and challenged. Writers have the power to educate readers while simultaneously entertaining them. I forgot my reading glasses since I wasn't prepared for that. Sorry about that.
That's wonderful. I appreciate that. So tell me about your relationship with animals.
My relationship with animals is one of great love and respect and reverence, actually. And I think I had that relationship with animals as a small child. But as you grow older, you know, you become distant from that. There's a reason that animals talk in children's books, and there's a reason that they don't talk as much in books for adults. And I think I kind of lost sight of my love for all animals until about the last 10 or 15 years, when I started thinking more about my relationship with animals, the way we use animals. I became vegan. I started working animals into my fiction writing, and just no looking back from there. I'm sort of a literary activist, you might say.
Do you own any animals?
We are the human guardians of 2 cats right now, and we've rescued and fostered many other animals over the years.
The human guardians. I used the wrong word.
Well, it's sometimes we like to think, you know, that no one owns anyone else, and extending that to animals helps us see them as, you know, individuals rather than objects.
Okay, so you're teaching me.
That's the idea.
Well, your book, as I'm reading through it, it seemed to me it's kind of a workbook. It has a utilitarian style. Why'd you write it like that?
Well, we wanted the writers to have something, you know, it's a slender book. You could fit it in a handbag or something if you wanted. We wanted writers to have both the lessons on craft and the ideas around animal literature, as well as the writing prompts that are good for generating new writing or getting you out of writer's block. So there are more than 100 prompts in the book that kind of can jumpstart your writing or to give you new ideas and new ways of looking at things.
Well, you talked about rethinking my language, which I was reading that in the book, and then I caught myself, and then you caught me. I'm stumbling around trying to figure out how to talk about animals, and your book says you need to rethink your language. What does that mean?
Definitely. So one example is that a lot of writers refer to animals as it in books, in novels, in nonfiction. And we advocate for using the pronouns he, she, or they. Even if you don't know the animal's gender, for example, you could use the pronoun they, or you could figure out the animal's gender and use he or she, because using it sort of objectifies the animal, whereas using a pronoun makes that animal an individual, which changes everyone's perception of that living being.
So we begin to think of the animal in a different way when we, instead of objectifying them.
Absolutely.
We're looking at the animal in human terms.
Not so much human terms, but fellow living creatures, I would say. Yeah, because they're not human. I mean, we're human, they're non-human, we're all animals. So they're very different from us. But I think it does, as you hinted at, it does go a long way into showing our connection. You know, there are so many ways in which we are alike. We feel pain, we feel emotion, we feel happy or sad. You know, and animals, we need to extend that to animals to realize they're very similar to us in some ways. And that'll change effectively how we treat them.
My guest is Midge Raymond, co-owner of Ashland Creek Press and co-author of Animal Rights, Prompts and Practices to Guide the Animal Writer's Journey. So how should the writer think about the story when they're thinking about incorporating animals?
Well, I would say that if you're thinking about incorporating animals, think about an animal as a character, just as you would any human character, right? So if you're thinking about, you know, making an animal a large part of the story, what is that animal's personality? Who is this animal as an individual? How do they fit into their habitat as well as interacting with the human habitat? You know, as an example, in my two novels, both Florian and My Last Continent have a lot of penguins in them. And in My Last Continent, I created a penguin character who I called Admiral Byrd, as after the explorer.
Right.
And just to give a face to all the, you know, hundreds of penguins that the penguin researcher in the novel was researching, you know, I wanted to have one individual just to show that they're all individuals, even if we only saw them in the novel in big groups.
Okay, so there's a character development going on.
Absolutely.
With the animals.
Absolutely.
Okay, so I never would have thought that's something that writers are thinking about.
You know, I think most writers don't, and that's why we felt this book would be a great way to show them how to do that and how to do that effectively. And some writers do, of course. At Ashland Creek Press, we published a novel called Love and Ordinary Creatures by Gwen Hyman Rubio, and it's a novel that is entirely narrated from the point of view of a sulfur-crested cockatoo. And that's a kind of writing for animals that's really challenging, where you get into an animal's head and you create a voice for that animal. And that animal is the main character. And she did an extraordinary job with that. It is not easy to do. And that's one example of doing it well. She did a lot of research. She's a beautiful writer. She's a New York Times bestselling writer. But she's also did her research and got to know that animal and gave him a full three-dimensional character with a personality, with flaws. And throughout the story, he has an arc from beginning to end.
So it's interesting because I had a little chuckle at the beginning of a chapter where you use the quote about a cat and what constitutes a story.
Yes.
And doesn't.
John Le Carré said, "The cat sat on the mat is not a story. The cat sat on the other cat's mat is a story."
That's a story. There's got some intrigue there.
Absolutely. Things have to happen in stories. And usually writers think about human characters when they make things happen in stories. And the same can happen if you have animal characters. Animals are just as cunning as we are. They're just as silly as we are. They can be duplicitous. You know, anyone who studies animals for any amount of time knows all of this.
Well, you know, whenever I think about books and movies, I think about a plot.
Mm-hmm.
and subplots. And your workbook says, I call it a workbook, your book says that that's secondary, that the character is primary.
Absolutely. Character is really what informs plot in any story, because you can make up a plot out of thin air, but plugging a character into it won't really make it as intriguing to a reader as if it comes from the character themselves, you know? So if really, basically, plot is what happens when something gets in the way of a character and what that character wants or needs. You know, you're on your way to work, you need to get to work, and then something happens that prevents you from getting to work. That could be interesting. It's not so interesting in and of itself unless there's a reason you need to get to work. You know, I had my interview at 9:25 with you. What if something had happened on my way here? You know, there's all kinds of things to think about with story. But the more character development there is, the higher the stakes are in the story.
Okay, well, something else that was surprising for me, you're the first person that I've ever met with a concern for the Tasmanian devil. What brought that about?
That came about when John and I went to Tasmania and we met our first Tasmanian devils. We heard them first on a small remote island off the coast of Tasmania where we were hiking and camping for 4 days on a little island called Moriah Island. And we could hear them, but we couldn't see them. But we learned so much about them. We learned that they had been rehabilitated, brought to Moriah Island where they could live without the deadly facial tumor disease that Tasmanian devils are suffering from on the island, on the mainland. And then we were so intrigued, we went back to on mainland Tasmania, we went to meet them at a sanctuary, and we got to see them really pretty up close, and we got to hear them, and it was an extraordinary experience. They are beautiful animals. They sound ferocious, but they are adorable. And we actually ended up writing Devil's Island. It's a mystery novel that we wrote together. In a way, we created a mystery that has nothing to do with devils, but we worked them into the story to sort of raise awareness about the devils. Because as you say, very few people know a lot about them.
That's interesting. So you brought attention to that, the plight of the Tasmanian devil, through your novel.
Exactly. It was sort of a locked room mystery where a bunch of hikers are stranded on a remote island in a storm and things go wrong. But we decided to work the devils into the story just to make it interesting, but also to raise that awareness.
So what are some of the unintended consequences when writers don't pay attention to how they write about animals?
Well, on a large scale, for example, as I mentioned, Peter Benchley's Jaws, that had a pretty devastating effect on sharks because people universally feared and loathed them in many ways. And sharks are now being overfished, and it's a problem. But even in the small ways, you know, when you use the word it instead of he or she or they, it kind of distances you from an animal, whether it's a house cat or whether it's the deer in the forest. You know, you feel that separation instead of feeling that connection.
So is that applicable to some of our domestic pets, like dogs, cats, rabbits?
Absolutely, absolutely. I couldn't imagine calling my cat an it instead of a she or a he, you know, just as I wouldn't refer to John as it, you know. There's a writer named Robin Wall Kimmerer who wrote a really wonderful essay. I believe it's called Nature Needs a New Pronoun. And in this essay, she argues that you shouldn't use it for anything in nature. And in her native language, and in fact in many indigenous languages, the same words are used for all living beings. There's no different pronouns for a tree or a dog or a human.
So it changes the way we think when we change our language.
Absolutely. Yeah, we're so less likely to hurt an animal if it's a he or she than an it. And as Kimmerer writes in her essay, we think about picking up the saw before chopping down a tree if it's a she and not an it.
Wow.
So it's a new way of looking at animals and nature.
So you and your husband facilitate workshops and you hold training on this. Tell me about that.
Writing for Animals is the program that we have available online as a self-paced program. And then as often as we can, we teach it online via Zoom in a four-week session where we go over a lot of the things that are in the book Animal Rights. And we also are also going to have a book launch for Animal Rights on Wednesday, June 18th. And that's going to be open to all writers. It's a sort of mini workshop.
Okay, well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have. Thank you for joining me here in the studio.
Thank you so much, Mike.